Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College, brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now, here's your host, Dave Odom.
Welcome back to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the Florida State Seminoles and my good friend, Leonard Hamilton. Welcome, Leonard. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm glad to always be around my buddy Dave Odoms, and I enjoy always being on your podcast. So this is a very worthwhile initiative by the NABC, and I'm glad to see you guys giving us the opportunity to be a part of it.
Well, we're honored to have you, and let's get started here. Of course, a lot of these things I'm going to bring up, I know, because you and I share a lot of things. Namely, we grew up in the state of North Carolina, me on the East Coast and you on the western part of the state. You were born in Gastonia, North Carolina, went to Gaston Community College, and then on to University of Tennessee, Martin. How did that happen? I mean, were you, and again, I know the answers here, but tell us about, you know, your love for basketball as a young person growing up in Gastonia.
Well, you can't leave out Highland High School in Gastonia, North Carolina.
Well, I'm glad you put it in there. Let's don't do that.
No, I went to Gaston Highland High School, which it no longer exists now. It's Highland Tech.
And, all right, now was that integration deal there? Segregation integration?
Yes. Matter of fact, my high school's team, I started with four juniors. And the year that they integrated the school systems in Gastonia, all four of the guys who started with me and junior varsity players, moved down to Ashley High School at the time. Now it's called Ashbrook. It was Ashley, and we won the state tournament the first year that they integrated. So it made the integration transition very smooth in Gastonia because the kids who transferred from Highland to Ashley, you know, made a positive impact, and I think it made everybody happy, and that was something very exciting. Well, in reality, when I graduated from college, I was initially, I had a football scholarship. I had got a football scholarship to Livingston College there in North Carolina. I came down with a rare I was affected by something I ate or something I got into, and I couldn't report the football camp that season, in the summer. And by coincidence, I was planning on going to join the Army, and they started a basketball program the year that I graduated at Gaston Community College, and the coach, a guy named Pete Brooks, who actually went to school in Florida at Stetson, was trying to find players in the area to fill out a roster. And as I was preparing to join the Army, he kept coming through the community looking for me, and I had made my mind up I was just going to go join the Army so I could get my education paid for. And he was so persistent that I was part of the first basketball team that they ever had at Gaston Community College. And so that way, and then how I got to UT Martin was that we had a game there, and I scored 54 points in one game, and it was kind of how those types of events travel around the country. And my coach, being from Kentucky originally, put me and a guy named Jim Turpin from Gastonia in the car over the Christmas holidays and drove us out to around that area, that part of the Midwest, and we worked out for the coach at UT Martin and several other schools. And, you know, it was over the holidays. Wasn't nobody there. It was a dead campus. But, you know, for me, just having an opportunity to go to college was very meaningful to me. And so when I finished up at Gaston Community College, I had an opportunity to go to UT Martin, which was a little different because I think I was the first African-American basketball player that they had. And that was always a transition. And when you're going through a situation like that, but I think that, you know, I always tell people that I think my steps have always been ordered by the good Lord upstairs. I was a good for that situation. That situation was excellent for me. So I had an opportunity to go and be a part of you know, integrating another school in their basketball program. And it worked out well for me, and I hope it worked out well for them.
No doubt it did. And I know about the integration thing because I was a high school basketball coach 1971, 72, actually 69 to 76 at Durham High School. And, you know, there was Hillside, which was the traditionally black school on one side of town, John Lucas being the number one personality and player that came out of there. And then I was at Durham High on the other side of town, and, you know, it was rocky times. Wasn't as smooth as maybe as it was in Gastonia, but it was an important time in Durham as well. Tell us real quickly, Leonard, the most famous basketball graduate that ever came out. I know there were two that came out of Ashbrook High School when you were there. Maybe
well,
after
I had, I after I left, obviously James Worthy.
There you go.
Was probably, you know, you don't know this, but James Danny Worthy, the late James Danny Worthy, was we were all in the same family. We were distant cousins. Arthur Lee Worthy was my lived with us, and he was a relative. He was closer to the Worthy family, and we had, you know, back in those days, everybody claimed they were cousins to everybody. You know how that goes, especially in the neighborhood that we grew up in.
Yeah.
Danny and James and all of us went to the same church, and I remember James and Danny sitting on his other brother sitting on the back row with their white shirts. They had to wear white shirts every Sunday, but James was part of our church. And matter of fact, Danny and my brothers grew up with the school together, and they all hung out together. And Danny moved in with my brothers in Lexington, Kentucky, when he graduated from school, and stayed there with us for a number of years. So I was very close to the Worthy family, and his father and mother and everybody went to our church. Matter of fact, James's father was a deacon in our church.
Wow.
So I have a great relationship with him. Now, he was an outstanding basketball player, not only at Ashbrook, but also there at University of North Carolina.
Okay, we're going to spend all day on that. It was interesting to me, but let's move along here, because your next stop coming out of UT Martin was an assistant under the great Lake Kelly, and there were two African Americans coming out of the mountains of North Carolina. One of them's name was Fly Williams, and the other one's name was Henry Logan. You would know both of them.
Well, now, I actually, I was in Henry, I believe, was a year or two earlier than me. I remember Henry Logan, as he was a senior, I think he pitched a no-hitter against our baseball team. I think he knocked it. Maybe a couple home runs. He ran six touchdowns against our football team, and I think he scored 39 points against our basketball team. Henry Logan.
You give him a letter? You give him a letter in each one of those things.
Henry Logan was actually the real deal. Now, this for people who probably wouldn't know, during that era, Henry Logan was at Western Carolina. I think Dwight Durant was at Catawba.
Gene Little
was at High Point. Bob Kaufman, I believe, was at Guilford.
My alma mater, along with me. Go ahead.
And that was some of the best basketball. And during those days, not very many of the African American players had the opportunity to go to the ACC during that time. But those three, Littles, Durant, and Logan, would have been as good a player as you could find. I think Little played in the NBA, and so did Henry Logan. He played in the ABA. So yeah. You made one mistake there. When I went to Austin Peay, I went there as a graduate assistant.
Ooh.
And and the full-time assistant coach became ill in January and had to resign. So a few months after graduating from UT Martin, I was, even though I was a graduate assistant, I was basically all, I had all the responsibilities of a full-time assistant coach with Coach Lake Kelly. And by January of my first year in school, and I had all the responsibilities of a full-time assistant coach. So I got thrown right into the fire. Dave, in reality, I was coaching kids that were older than me. And but Coach Kelly gave me all the responsibilities to teach and learn and grow, and that was so instrumental in my overall development, that because I had to grow up fast. I had to learn how to communicate. I had to learn how to teach, be accurate, and have the knowledge of the game to represent, you know, whether or not we were going to be successful or not. And in March, I asked Coach Kelly, would he let me go on the road recruiting? Well, understand, I'm 1 year removed from playing in college at UT Martin, and now I am on the road, Dave, recruiting. Now, the Fly Williams story was that he was not from North Carolina. He actually was from New York City. And I went to New York City, was my first recruiting trip ever, when I didn't even know how to rent a car. I actually went up to the Avis rental car agency with some cash and said, I want to rent a car. The lady said, where's your credit card? I told her I didn't have one, but I had cash. She let me know that I could not rent a car in New York City without a credit card. Hey, I had never heard of a credit card. Didn't know anybody who had a credit card in my neighborhood. So, but anyway, my first recruiting trip, Dave, the first youngster that I talked to was a kid named Dave Odom, who was Fly Williams' friend. And I stayed around all that day, my first day, full day recruiting in New York. And I went to Fly Williams' house so I got the address, and I had somebody take me over there. I had never seen him play, but I heard that he was a superstar. So my first day on the job that night, I'm in Fly Williams' house. Ironically, he's supposed to come home at 7 o'clock. He didn't come home until the next morning at 8 o'clock. So I sat in his mom's house all night long talking to her, and each time, as the time would get late, I was embarrassed because I was too scared to leave out of Brownsville, out of New York, and go anywhere. I didn't know where to go, didn't know how to get there. So I said, I'm not leaving this house until I talk to this kid. I talked to her all night. And Dave, a couple of times she got up to use the bathroom, and I turned the clock back so she wouldn't know what time it was. and as the sun was coming up in the morning, she went to the bathroom the last time. I pulled the shades down so she wouldn't see the sun coming through the window. And when Fly got there, we developed a good relationship. And that's a true story as to how I got started in business.
All right, listen. Your next stop was a little bit different than that. Somehow or another, this guy, Joe B. Hall, that was a great coach at Kentucky, found out about you, offered you a job in 1974. You go to Lexington, Kentucky for 12 years under Joe B. Hall. You guys are NCAA runner-ups in 75, NCAA champions in 78, made the Final Four in 1984, which our Virginia team was also in that Final Four out in Seattle. Entirely different. You earned your way to Kentucky. What was that like? No more sleeping on sofas, no more cash for credit cards and rental cars and all of that. This is the full-blown blue blood basketball.
Well, the interesting thing about how I got to Kentucky, and I always tell people my steps have always been ordered, and I've always seemed to have had a hedge of protection around me and everything that I did, even when I tried to mess up. By coincidence, Lake Kelly had been the head basketball coach at Lexington Lafayette High School in Lexington, Kentucky. We had two players on our team from Lexington, Kentucky that played for us at Austin Peay. And my second year at Austin Peay with Fly Williams and Danny Odoms and a couple of players from Lexington, we actually played the University of Kentucky to, I think it was an overtime, might have been a double overtime game in Nashville in the NCAA tournament. So how ironic, my head coach is coached in Lexington. I got players on the team from Lexington. We're playing Kentucky in the NCAA tournament to an overtime game. I think the score was something like 106, 103. And the SID was the brother of the, I believe either the, might have been one of the administrators, might have been the voice of the Kentucky Colonels or their sports information guy, was the brother of the same of the guy at Austin Peay. And so when I resigned at Austin Peay, he recommended me to his brother, who was a friend of Coach Hall, and Coach Hall decided to get in touch with me. But because of the connection, because of my path, and I always say my steps are ordered, my dumb butt, I tried to get out of coaching and take a job at Dow Chemical, but the man upstairs didn't think it was the time for me to do that. And the stars were always lined up for me to go to Lexington, Kentucky, in which, by coincidence, my first day on the job with Dow Chemical in Charlotte, North Carolina, Joe B. Hall called and asked me to come in for an interview. I went to interview. My first day on the job was a Monday. Monday night, I was in Lexington, Kentucky. Tuesday, I was talking to Joe Hall about the job. And Wednesday, the next Monday, I resigned my position at Dow Chemical and drove to Lexington, Kentucky, and I was there for 12 years. Now, how's that for a story?
That's a great story, and I can't let you get out of the Kentucky thing without mentioning a phone call that I got from you. I was in the Virginia office at the time, and we'd just come off the Sam Bowie and the Sampson recruiting and all of that kind of thing. And I'll never forget you calling me and saying to me that Coach Joe B. Hall had given you permission to call me and offer me a chance to come to Kentucky as an assistant. And you promised me if I would do that, that we would be known as Salt and Pepper. I still remember that. So you can't deny that.
Well, I had a great experience in Lexington working for Coach Hall. Very similar to my relationship that I had with Lake Kelly, who I thought was one of the greatest coaches of all time that very few people knew about. But I had a great experience, and Coach Hall trusted my judgment, and he asked me who he should hire to replace one of his assistants who had gone on and taken a head job someplace. I don't remember exactly who it was, and I recommended you.
And I appreciate that. I've never forgotten that. That was an amazing thing. All right, look, we're running out of time here, so we're going to hit these next things real quick. Tell me what you learned, what it meant to be the head coach at Oklahoma State.
Well, I think that I had learned so much from Lake Kelly, just in terms of organization, how to run practices, how to set up drills, and then going to Kentucky, I had an idea. I was exposed to the winningest program in the history of college basketball and how you would run a program of excellence academically, weight training, conditioning, the recruiting aspect, how to operate in a fishbowl existence, what it was like at the very, very top, the pressures that went with, overall running the program. So I had gained a lot of experience. And so when I went to Oklahoma State, obviously there was a lot of things that had to be done that I had learned at Kentucky. Number one, we didn't even have a basketball camp prior to me going there. We didn't have a radio show. We didn't have a television show. We improved what we thought was the academic tutorial program. We renovated the Gallagher Iba Arena. We renovated the dormitories where our players live. So that was – but because I had been a part of all of that in Lexington, I had an experience when I went to Oklahoma State to understand how to set those things up, radio shows, camps, TV shows, the academic program, weight training, conditioning program. And obviously, by being an assistant coach at that level, I had a knack for knowing how to recruit. I had developed a relationship with people like you and other folks. I thought I had a pretty good judgment of how to go hire people who I thought would be instrumental in helping me be successful. So I thought I was well prepared. But once again, that was I thought that for me, from an assistant coach position, I wanted to be a head coach. Well, like most assistant coaches, I'm sure you can attest to this, I wanted jobs that I thought were great jobs. And I was laying there sometime, many times, just thinking, when's my chance going to come? And it was almost like one night, in the middle of the night, the Lord reached down from heaven and slapped me on both sides of my face and say, you don't need a great job. You need a job that needs to be built. You need a job that you can utilize your skills somewhere where that has not won, and that you can learn how to build programs. And as opposed to wanting to go and be in a big city or program that fills the arena with nice facilities and a good conference, that's not what I needed. I need to be somewhere where I can learn how to build programs, and that's kind of been my odyssey. I've been able to go places that need a little fixing up, and I think that I was better suited to going to a program to help build as opposed to going somewhere where it's already been successful.
Next stop, Miami. They're in the Big East. You go in there, and they needed rebuilding. What did you learn there?
Well, when I went on the visit, they had this beautiful rendition of the basketball facility they were going to build for me on campus. And when I left, that same beautiful picture was still sitting in my office, but I didn't have the facility. but I had the thought, and I went there as an independent. They did not have a conference affiliation. And the next year, without Big East players, we were thrown right into the Big East after my second year there, and that was a little bit of a surprise. And so what did I learn? I learned that you always had to prepare yourself for the unexpected, because after my first year there, I go from independent to the Big East with all the Hall of Fame coaches, Connor Secker, Massimino, John Thompson, Boeheim. That was a Colissimo. Like, oh, my gosh. It was really, really a challenge for me coming to a program that was coming from independent to a conference with rich tradition of programs without rich tradition of program players. So I learned that you had to work your butt off to try to catch up, and that was probably the biggest challenge of my life.
I don't know what in the world possessed you to take the Washington Wizards job, but you did. You went there 1 year. And the thing I remember about that, I saw your last press conference the day y'all finished up the season, and you did your press conference. You told about whatever happened in the game and maybe for the year, and you turned to the media and you said, by the way, I'm resigning tomorrow, and you walked out. And that was the end of it.
Well, but that was a good opportunity for me. I enjoyed it. I learned an awful lot. I think I appreciate the opportunity, and I don't think I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the experience. Just to learn and grow. Really appreciate the moment that I had there. But I'm better suited for college, only because, I think I'm better suited for helping raise and developing young people. I enjoy that part of it, and that's something that I always remember as a special time in my life. And I learned and grew and moved on to have an opportunity to be at Florida State that I really enjoy.
We got about 10 minutes left here, and I want to really hit Florida State. You had an opportunity to go to Florida State from the NBA. You have had a fantastic tenure career at Florida State. And I'm going to be honest with you. Early on, people looked at Florida State and they said, Florida State can win a national championship, .. because Bobby Bowden is coaching the football team. But nobody said Florida State can win a national championship, .. because Leonard Hamilton is coaching the basketball team. What did you see in Florida State? Now, you hadn't won a national championship. We know that. But you're knocking the heck out of the door that leads to it. What did you see in Florida State that made you want to go there and chase a national championship? An ACC championship, which you've won, and move on to a national championship stage, which you have not won, but you're still doing it. What's your program all about there?
Well, my thought process was that, number one, I had enjoyed my experience in the state of Florida when I was very familiar with people and people were familiar with me. The fact that Florida State was in the ACC, I thought that I found that very attractive. And then the fact that Dave Hart, as the athletic director, I had known of him, and I thought that he was a tremendous leader, especially, and he was extremely knowledgeable of basketball. And it looked like to me that Florida State had made a commitment to wanting to be one of the better basketball programs by the money that they've invested in a brand new practice facility right next to the Tucker Center. So those things kind of excited me. And to be very honest with you, I didn't have any familiarity with a lot of things, but I knew that with those things in place, we could find a way to build a program. First thing I did, I have great, great assistants that I thought that really, really made a huge difference in how consistent we would be in on our journey. And I had high guys who had high character, good family guys, who really, really understood what we need at this level. And I've been very fortunate, you know, to have enjoyed having a great staff that has helped me build this program.
Leonard, let's talk about that a little bit, because I look at your staff, Stan Jones and Charlton and those guys. You put a lot of value in the coaches that you hire to be on your staff. You give them specific responsibilities, and you ask them to do it. You told me one time, I said, Leonard, you got great assistants. You said, if I don't, they'll be gone. He said, I've got to have great assistants. That's important on this podcast, because I can't tell you how many young people I hear from each week after we have a coach like you on that talks about the value of being an assistant coach. A lot of people will call me and say, you know, Coach, I really appreciate you getting, let's say in this case, Coach Hamilton to talk about how you progress as an assistant to get to, you know, whatever level these coaches are at. Talk to us about what coaches, young coaches, maybe high school coaches, should do to progress in the coaching profession.
And the first thing, Dave, I am so appreciative to the responsibility that Lake Kelly gave me. 1 year removed from playing college basketball, he's on one end of the court teaching his drills. I'm on the other end of the court teaching my drills. He gave me responsibilities and expected me to get them done. Now, because of the confidence he showed in me, I wanted to be as knowledgeable. I wanted to study every angle. I wanted to know everything that went on in our preparation, because if he was going to give that kind of confidence in me, I wanted to make sure that I was always prepared. And so, as a result of my preparation, I've always been extremely confident and comfortable teaching and being able to go into the game coaching. So that was good for me. That was good for me. Then going to Kentucky with Joe Hall, Joe Hall gave me equal responsibility. He had confidence in me, allowed me to be a part of planning and on-court coaching and helping develop in every phase of the program, especially even on the basketball court. So with that said, I always felt that once I got my head job, I was extremely prepared because of the opportunity that my head coaches gave me. And I always said that as I moved through my career, I wanted my assistant coaches to feel they were needed, wanted, and appreciated. And the responsibility that coaches gave me, I give to them, because I know it can't do anything but help them prepare them for their careers. But on the other hand, you know, I felt good about the responsibilities I had, and these guys are loyal to me, and I want to be loyal to them by letting them have the responsibilities I think that's a bit better prepared.
Another thing that I think is true of you, Leonard, and I appreciate it so much, is you're not one of those head coaches that stands on a corner and beats his chest and says, look at me. I mean, you earn your keep every single day. And you do it by, I think you do it by, you know, a popular word today is culture. I think you really spend a lot of time with your players individually, teaching them not only how to be great basketball players and be on a great basketball team, but how to be a great person. And it seems to me like you feel like you owe the parents of the players you got and the players you got them specifically to teach them what it's going to be like, not in the 4 years that you got them at Florida State, but in the 40 years after they graduate and quit playing basketball at Florida State. Is that not true?
Right,
I mean,
Dave, you're so right. You're so right. I agree with you 100% because, Dave, if all I have when I hang up my whistle, I'm sitting here in my office. I got so many NCAA watches and rings and plaques and Coach of the Year awards, and people seek me out and all that kind of stuff. But if all I got is newspaper clippings and recognition, a nice life, and all this memorabilia that I have here, and the guys who busted their butt for me playing don't are not on top of the world and not having a nice life, then what have I done? So it's more important to me to make sure that I do everything possible to help prepare them for the real world, making sure they get their education, make sure they're good husbands, good fathers, good neighbors, because I truly believe that you are being a part, you're taking teenagers and ushering them into young adulthood. You have young people at one of the most important times of their life where they're impressionable, where they're developing their philosophies of how they're going to live their lives. You need, and most coaches are so instrumental in shaping those, the minds and the philosophies of young people, that you have to take that seriously and help them be in the position to someday have the same level of success that you have. And if you don't do that, then you're shortchanging, you're cheating. You're cheating your kids, you're cheating yourself, and I'm not real sure you're fulfilling the definition of a coach. Coaching is not only winning. You got to, on the court, you got to win in life. You got to help these guys prepare themselves so they can have the same life that you've enjoyed. That's been our philosophy. I only want assistant coaches around me who believe in that, who can relate to the kids. And I also feel like you have to set the example yourself as a head coach to let everybody know these are the standards that we live by. These are the accountabilities that you should hold yourself to. And I need a teamwork. I need a family atmosphere. I need everybody to hold themselves accountable. On the basketball court, we're going to defend, play unselfish, and play hard as hell.
You told me when I asked you to come on this program that you had to go recruiting this afternoon, and I don't know if you still do or not, but the point being, when you start thinking about next year's team, one of the things, and a very important thing, is, you know, putting together a team that can live together in the locker room, in the dorm, on the campus, on trips that you take, that can pull together when you're facing the Dukes and the North Carolinas and the Syracuses and the Virginias of the ACC. They got to pull together. You've got a team this year, and I don't want to go into too much of it, but you got a team this year. There's maybe as many as 10, 11 guys that you trust in putting putting them out on the floor at any time. You trust them. And I think they sense that. And they play hard for not only for you, but they play hard for each other.
No doubt about that. I think we probably win more games because of the culture that we have on our team as we do with the physical talents that we have. I think the kids really understand how you have to win. They're winners as people. They realize that we win games by committee, that we're successful as we can because we're 18 strong. You're only as strong as your weakest link. These guys believe that. The walk-ons have as much input to what we're doing as the leading scorer on the team. They have a voice as well, and everybody's a part. And that's why I think that our guys are having such a measure of success. And when it seems as though somebody different steps up every night, it's not always the leading scorers and the guys are getting all the publicity. Everybody contributes in their own way.
I want to thank everyone for tuning into the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast and to Coach Hamilton. Leonard, you've been great. As you know, I think you're a champion. You're a champion person. You're a champion coach. And I'm just excited that you took 30, 40 minutes to be with us and to let these young coaches that listen to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast every week, let them know what it's all about and how you got to where you are and how interested you are in the game itself. So thank you so much. And to anyone who wants to learn more about the NABC, all they need do is visit nabc.com.